Okay, guys. Good morning. How is it going? Good? Yes. Fantastic. Fantastic. Please take your seats. If you are still searching for the seat, there are some seats in the middle. So just a little bit of request. If there is a seat next to you, please raise your hand. Okay. So, yeah. If you want to have a seat, you know where. You got plenty of choices. Good. So a couple of words regarding introduction. What this session is going to be about. A couple of words about myself. That's going to be short because we've got a lot of things to discuss today. As you see, my name is Paula Jay, and what I do is security. I'm the pen tester. I've got the company. It's called Secure. We've got two divisions. One is called Secure Consulting. Another one is called Secure Academy. So educational part and also consulting part. And I'm the person that has access to the source code of Windows, but not to 100%. That's why we still need to do a little bit of reverse engineering in our team. And our team always writes a lot of tools, which I will be showing you today, and you will be able to download them from the blog post after today as well. So this is the background. We've written over 200 hacking tools that nobody knows about. Yes, that's why it's good because they're not recognized by antivirus, of course. Anyway, so this is myself. We're going to be talking today about the disk. And that particular stuff, it's obviously related with security in a very interesting way, because there's a lot of information that operating system stores on the disk, which I believe you might find interesting. Regarding my speaking experience and speaking activities, last year I was rated a number one Ignite speaker. That proves one point, not that I can speak, possibly you will see, but it proves the point that security is a very important subject, and I believe that's why you're here, yes? Anyway, in the meantime, within the breaks between the sessions, because I'm delivering also the memory session today in the afternoon, we've created with our team a little bit of a quiz. This is secureacademy.com/quiz. You don't have to register. It's pure fun. 25 questions. You will see how you're going to go. Average is 13. 13 points out of 25. That's kind of a challenging score, isn't it? So you will see how you're going to do. If you're going to have higher than 13, I would love to hear it. If it's something lower, don't tell me, because, you know, don't tell me. Anyway, let's move forward. Within the disk, there is a plenty of things that we should look at. Yes, operating systems stores different types of logs. Operating systems stores different configuration files. Sometimes these configuration files are encrypted. Sometimes these are, for example, users' secrets. For example, if we store the password saved in a browser, is it really safe? Yeah, so these are the subjects that we're going to be talking about. There's a lot of places whenever we configure something and we put our password somewhere, obviously, this password must be somewhere in the registry, on the disk, yes, saved in some kind of an encrypted form. Is this a safe form? So there are so many different ways how we are able to encrypt data on the drive. Yes, and sometimes we think something is private, personal, but for real, it's not. Let me start with a little bit of warm-up demonstration before we actually get to the concrete details with what and where stuff is being saved on the disk. This is, as you see, Internet Explorer in the private mode. Yes, and it doesn't really matter. It can be Firefox, Edge, whatever. Yes, so any kind of browser in the private mode. This is a session that I was delivering in 2011, and basically what we're going to do, we're going to play it. So is private mode really private? Now that's the question that I would like to ask. And at the same time, I'm going to be running over here Process Monitor. And Process Monitor, as we know, is able to write and log a lot of interesting events within the operating system. My filter, just to show you, because it's actually quite interesting, it's like this. Yeah. So the only thing I'm doing over here, besides I just filter out a bunch of other processes, the category is write. Even though it sounds maybe simple, this is one of my favorite filters, because out of thousands or millions of events that you've got within the operating system, category is right shows what is really saved on the disk, and it's just a bunch of things. Yes, it's not that many things. So I am filtering things right now. I'm just going to exclude WinRAR, I'm going to exclude PowerPoint. So this is the setup, and let it go. So here, I'm going to be playing the session. Yeah, so the session started to play. Question is private mode really private? And of course, answer is probably not, because we are actually showing this particular type of information. And here, we've got the events of the Internet Explorer, yes, so that we are able to spot that this particular communication, yes, so this was a little bit before, yeah, this is something that we are able to spot over here. We can work on the filter a little bit more, yes, but effectively, what's the case is that our Internet Explorer, yes, shows us, of course, the cached result of what is happening within the certain communication, yes? So this kind of events can be spotted here. And effectively, what is happening underneath is that in the private mode, we are saving the stream in the temporary file, which we can collect the chunks, and we are able later on, if we don't clean it, of course, we are able to pull them out from the disk, to technically get out this information and be able to see actually what person saw. So private mode is absolutely not private because the browser still has to cache details on the disk. So if someone performs a disk recovery, the data recovery from the disk, you're able kind of to see of what was happening there. I'm always laughing that in a private mode, my husband is kind of busted because at the end, you are able to recover stuff from the disk anyway, right? Anyway, okay, so let's move forward. So we're going to be talking about data chunks, so different types of places where we are able to find the information. And later on, we're going to be discussing system scenarios where operating system stores that kind of an information too. Yeah. So at the beginning, places where we are able to find something, some cool type of information. First of all, a little bit of a summary. So in operating system, for example, we've got a lot of different types of cache. One of the things is called automatic destinations. Another stuff, it's called prefetch, yes? Another one, it's quite easy, it's called most recently used, yes? But we are also able to find data, for example, in hibernation file. My next session will be about memory analysis. We're going to be getting into the hibernation file. You're going to see what's out there, yes? But let's have a look into all these interesting places where the secrets can be stored, yes? So we're going to be starting with a very grateful place, which is something that we all use and we all know, that is the cache of the indexing service. Cache of the indexing service. Now question is, what kind of tool I'm going to use for that? Well, there is a tool, it's called ESCDBView, and in operating system, this ESC type of a database, it's quite a typical database where we store a lot of types of information, not necessarily indexing service data, but also a couple of other things. And what we're going to do over here, we will, simply speaking, open a cache that I already created, which is in my case, C analysis, and I got Windows EDB. Yes. So this is the cache that I'm talking about. Originally, you can find cache in a little bit more advanced path, and that path would be, and let's maybe get there, yes, so that would be at that stage, we've got this in program data, yes, and we've got that in a Microsoft, and we've got that in search, yes, so this is our path, we've got that in data, applications, yes, and then we've got Windows, and over here, as you see, there is a one big file, it's called Windows EDB. And this is the cache of the indexing service. What's the conclusion coming out of this, and why am I showing you this? Because every single file you put in Windows in the disk, it's going to be immediately indexed, and that is in the cache, in the history. So if someone dropped the file for the moment and someone was like, oh, shoot, I'm going to delete it, yes, then, sorry, you're going to find it in the history. That's the point, yes? So was this file there? Of course, you're going to find it in the indexing service. So there are plenty of tools to analyze that. This tool and all of the tools that I will be showing to you are free. Yes, you can download it for free in the internet. So I'm going to connect right now into one of the data structures. I think this one would be nice. It takes a little bit of time because my indexing, it's quite big. It's still 8 gigabytes that is out there. So I have to be able to connect. And what we can see over here It's the history of the files and folders that were ever indexed. That's your indexing cache. When you clean your index, that's exactly what you clean, yes? So am I able to see more over here? Absolutely. Me, cats, for example, yes? So I'm searching for that. Yes, so I got some presentation. I got, for example, another presentation. Yes, and I got Mimi Cat's trunk. So I get plenty of options that indicate me that that particular file was actually there. Yeah, so this is the indexing service, ESC Database View. It's the software that we are talking about. Okay, what about the other cool stuff? Well, there was one cool stuff, absolutely, and that is a prefetch. If there is about history being saved in the disk of what kind of stuff was ever executed in the disk and so on, prefetch will give you that particular information. Who has prefetch? Everybody has prefetch. Sometimes on some SSD drives, prefetch is actually turned off, so you need to just turn it on by changing the registry hive. It's called memory management, and then within the prefetch settings, you can do it. Yes, I will show you in a moment how to do it. So if you are ever wondering, how could it be that this process executed? To me, I didn't see anything. Well, you can always verify that in prefetch. One of our customers, one of our favorite customers, actually called us because there was this lady, her name was Veronique, very pleasant woman. I mean, really like her. And she's a very socializing person. Like, she literally knows everyone, who with whom, who got divorced, who gave birth, or whatever. She knows that, yes? So if you want to know, you go to her. And basically, she's a little bit of a ADHD person, yes? So she's like, oh, yeah, oh, great, like this, yes? And they were like, oof, to me, I mean, I'm quite a calm person, so, but I like her a lot. And you can imagine that she can also cause a little bit of a trouble because of that. So what happened is that she got a email, was saying, hey, someone left you a voice message on a Dropbox. Obviously, this is how everybody communicate here. Yes, we leave ourselves voice messages on a Dropbox. Yes, so Veronique was like, oh, on a Dropbox too. Someone wants to tell me something. Click. Yes, so she will literally click on everything that moves because she's like that kind of a hyperactive person. Yes, so what is actually funny is that when, of course, she clicked on that, there was a ransomware she brought to the field, and because it's a finance trading company, yes, and she was managing documents for traders, that was quite a painful morning for everybody, as you can imagine. And Thomas, our customer, he calls me and he's like, "Wow, help us, we'll do something." I'm like, "Come on, man! I mean, put your document. There is an incident response procedure. Follow that. Don't call me. I mean, seriously." So, what happened? Yes, and his question was, "How could we guess on which computers the ransomware was executing?" Yes. So what we did, we pulled out the prefetch from all of the machines, and we found out what's weird. What's the weird file name? Yeah, because you still evaluate by the file name. It could be Notepad, though. If it was called Notepad, then probably we would not consider this as weird. Yes. But this is the beauty of prefetch. It's not perfect, but it's there, so it can help you out to pull out information from the disk. Yeah. Let's have a look. Prefetch. Where prefetch is? Prefetch is in C Windows prefetch. C Windows prefetch. You've got their PF files, and these PF files contain information. I got some good and bad news for you. If you use Windows 7 or Windows 8, you got a plenty of free tools out there. If you use Windows 10, prefetch structure changed. And when we saw it, we wrote our own tool, which is also free, which we are obviously happy to share. So you've got always an alternative. CQ prefetch parser, that's the name. And I copied already for myself the prefetch file, so minus F for file, notepad file, minus A for analysis. It's super simple. Yeah, this is one of our CQ tools. And what this will give me is an information about what kind of modules were loaded when this file was loaded. For example, this one is in Polish. Yes, it's a demo. Pauli means pull as demo. Yes, txt. So it shows me all the different files that were opened within that particular process. That's kind of cool. And what is even better, yes, not only I see this, but I also see at the very beginning how many times and when I was running that particular file. Yes, so was this running today? Well, I'm able to see. Of course, question is, can user delete prefetch? User cannot delete prefetch because prefetch, it's a folder where modify permissions are only given to administrator's group and the local system. Yes, so answer is no. So that's kind of nice. But obviously, if the user is a local administrator, I don't have to mention that. Yes, user, yes, can delete prefetch. So this is one of the places where we are able to find a history of what was executing or what is executing within the certain operating system. Yes. Okay. Now, what else? Whenever we think, of course, about prefetch and the whole case, yes, I said that I will show you where we are able to change the registry hive in order to enable it. Absolutely, yes. Actually, I've got it within the PowerShell. This is this path here, current control set. And then we've got it within the particular, as you see, control, session manager, memory management, prefetch parameter, and then you've got enable prefetcher, and that should have a value 3, and then you are able to monitor that. Is there any performance like throughput on that? No, don't worry about it, seriously. Prefetch, it's cool. Though you find sometimes on this, I call it a cheap tips and tricks forums for administrators, when you can find literally everything, internet can handle all of the advice that can possibly happen, and some people recommend on these forums to clean the prefetch folder to save your disk space. Wow, you just save 100 megabytes. Yay! Yeah, so just don't delete it in general. Yes, it's okay. So saying, because that also happens out there. Okay, so we've got that. Okay, whenever we are thinking about where else cool information is stored, that is obviously within the user's profile. And in the user's profile, we can find such a huge amount of things. Yes, one of these things that I would like to show you, it's related with something that we call in operating system automatic destinations, or forensically we call them jump lists, JMP lists, jump lists. Now, before I do it, a little bit of a background. We do take part in different kinds of forensics projects. And some of them are easy, some of them are more difficult. And one of the set projects was actually from Iceland. And this was the situation, I'm sorry, that's the story, with the childhood pornography. And there was a disc with the potentially guy that was basically storing that kind of files. And the question to us was, hey guys, can you help us to find the evidence? Because he deleted all the data and he wiped and he decided to overwrite all the possible free space there. Yes. So we are like, yeah, sure, let's have a look. Yes. I mean, there is this moment that someone is smarter. He's smarter or we are smarter, or he's smarter and we are smarter. Could he delete this stuff? Absolutely, but he didn't, because we were smarter. So we were able to find it out. Yes, sometimes someone will be smarter. So it's always really about that. That's why log centralization matters. But in this case, I'm going to show you the tool. It's called Structured Storage Viewer. I mean, nothing really breathtaking, isn't it? But this tool is actually quite cool, because it allows us to interpret the structure of the jump lists. And the jump list contains information from each of the applications that you ever opened, what kind of files were opened within this application from the beginning of the Windows, from the beginning of the installation of the operating system. So if your Windows was installed for the past 3 years, yes, there's your 3 years history of what you've ever been opening out there. Yes? And this is how we found the evidence that this guy in the Windows Media Player was opening files with a not cool names, yes? So this was like, well, probably this was a video, so everything indicates that, so we have to pay close attention to it. Now, a little bit of a case, because the path is kind of long, so I have to enlarge it. Yes, this is the place where we've got our automatic destinations. So it's within the user's profile, yes? And then you've got, of course, updata, roaming, yes? And then you've got the other things like Microsoft Windows Recent. And then what's kind of cool and interesting, it's this. Like, this is this jump list. This 9B something something that you see, this name, it's forensically defined. There are so many apps in this world that are on the forensic list for identification like this. Yes, it's kind of hard to know it by heart, but I can tell you that this 9B something something, this is actually Notepad. Yes, this is Notepad. This is an identifier of Notepad. Yes, everybody has this. So can I, for example, get this information out? Yes, sure. So this is how it looks. not very pleasant environment, isn't it? And if I, for example, select this one, at this entry, you can spot over here 100% what I was opening. And I was opening, for example, this is on my live system right now, on the disk, on the D drive, I was in Notepad opening GFI TXT from desktop 2016, because that's how I kind of like preserve my history. I just wrapped the desktop, new year, thank you. And I guess a lot of people do that. But anyway, so this is the case. Yeah. So you can see anything in any app that was ever opened. So just saying, because this is something that is gathered out there, and that is absolutely not a popular destination for the different types of files to be out there. Okay, so we've got it. Whenever we are thinking about where else do we store some kind of information, because I showed you something that is related to the like what everybody has. Now, something that not everybody has, because it really depends on the situation, yes? So something that not everybody has is, for example, related with the cache of remote desktop. Yes, a remote desktop, this is actually pretty cool. Yes, so actually RDP protocol, as we could say it, may be technically correct. When you connect remotely to the server, I'm pretty sure that you've noticed that depending on the connection quality, the grid, I mean the pictures, yes, that you got, so the image that you got, is either blurry or sharp. Yes, so everybody, I guess, seen it at some point. So what's happening actually, because a remote desktop protocol, it's working very nicely because it's adjusting its performance to the connection speed, and what it does, it puts your screen on into the grid, and it downloads the little pictures, little bitmaps, in the quality that is adjusted to the link speed. Sometimes it's sharp and nice, sometimes it's blurry, like with pictures, yes? But, haha, these pictures are downloaded somewhere, obviously on the disk. So this is something that we should definitely have a look at. Where is this? And this is the tool. It's called CQRD Cache. Yes, without a bar. It's our very beta tool. And maybe not even our beta tool. I will tell you something very weird. Do you have the Woman's Day? Like, is it 8th of March? Maybe? Okay, so we got that too. So this is what my husband gave me on the Woman's Day. Yes. My husband is also working with me, but I'm the boss, so that's okay, you know. He works for our company, he works for Secure, and he's a little bit of a developer, and also, like, security developer, yes? Yes. What's the name of the program, yes? Good point. The name of the program is CQRD Cache. Yeah, that's the name. CQRD Cache. And this is the one that allows us to get the cache from the from the terminal services. So whenever, for example, you were connected, yes, then what I'm gonna do, I have to put it on a full screen because that's how it kind of works. It adjusts the view to the screen. So I will load right now the place where we store the remote desktop cache. Everybody has this cache, yes. So we've got terminal server client and cache in the user's profile. Everybody gathers this there. So over there, you're gonna find the whole pictures of everything that you saw when you were connecting remotely to the server. So if you are on a vacation traveling somewhere, yes, and you do MSTSC, bring it on, yes, don't forget to use the public switch. Because public, even though it's not efficient from the transfer perspective, it does not leave this cache. If you don't use it, here you can see the pictures of everything that you ever saw on some server. So if you open the text file with the passwords, let's say not, yes, it's going to be there. Yes, that's my point. So what is the point? And you might be wondering why we wrote our own tool. Because there is no tool like this in this world. We couldn't find it. Yes, so we're like, okay, maybe we should just grab it, yes? So I'm going to open it and then decode. Well, it's not the very nicest view probably you were expecting. It would be nice to have like print screens or something. Well, that depends really on your RDP version, because that little grid, yes, it's not really a puzzle. We can change the grid size to 64. I see that is actually too small, so I can decode it right now. And this is a little bit better, yes? It's never a puzzle, because if you move the window, the grid is kind of cutting it. So if you were not moving at all, yes, then it would be maybe possible to put it all together. But because you move your window, yes, these grids are kind of chaotic, yes? So that's why we've got this. What did the person saw? I got this for you. It's written past the hash over here. I get more, by the way. Yes, so this is a little reward for the answerer. When someone was connecting using remote desktop services to the server, what did this person do? Break it down. Yes. Thank you, IIS. Do you think I'm going to manage this? Sorry, I mean, yes! See, I did computers. I was never good at support. Yeah, so sorry. Okay, we got it. So this was definitely IIS. Yeah, we can see over here work processes and stuff like this. So these are a little bit of a component of the IIS console. Yeah, so this is a web service console. Okay, good. So this is one of the places where we are able to find these kind of secrets. Yes, where else that is cool? Well, of course, and here I don't want to be really obvious, so you're going to find the script on my blog, but there are things like, for example, profiles list. Yes, if the profile is getting deleted, profile is not getting deleted from the registry. Now, who was smarter? Because, for example, someone could delete the profile and all these automatic destinations are gone, because user can do it. But here comes a little bit of a case. Yes, if we, for example, list the profiles from the disk. Yeah, let's get this. Come on, come on, come on. Will this work? Yes, here we go. Yes, so we've got that. We've got a certain list of users here. Yes, can we, for example, get it from the registry? Absolutely. Yes, let's do it. That's a little bit of more information. Yeah, it's a little bit more than we had before. Exactly, because if you delete the profile, the history of profiles, it's not deleted from the registry, yes, F8. And what we can spot over here is that there is hacker. We didn't have it. Every single profile being deleted, it's out there. Again, who was smarter, yes? So this kind of information can be also found out from the disk. Okay, guys, so we've got that. Now, question is, how can we, within the operating system, yes, get into the files that we don't have access to? Yeah, on the other hand, I mean, we always have access to the files. And this is a philosophy of my grandfather. He is maybe a typical, very nice grandfather. And what he kind of like, his perspective is that this is all mine because I paid for it. How could it be that I don't know? I paid for it. Yeah? So this is kind of his approach. It's like, we paid for our Windows. How could it be that we don't know what is inside? Like, someone says access is denied to me? I mean, seriously? This is my system. Like, access denied? No, no. So let's get further and find out how we are able to copy the files that you don't have access to. So, for example, the Word file that is opened, you want to copy? No. That's not true. Yes, it's really always a matter of appropriate tools that we are using. So this is exactly what we're going to be testing over here. Okay, so let's run the console as an administrator. Lovely. And what we're going to be doing over here, we're going to be getting to the file, TSK, that is, simply speaking, some database. And some database in the operating system, as we know, contains hashes of the local users, yes? So, one thing is for sure, that if you ever want to get access to something cool in the operating system, and that is a secret being encrypted as a part of the operating system, blah, 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 yeah? So always, 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 everything starts from one registry hive. That is system, yes? The reason why system is because in system, we've got a boot key that consists of the names of the class, of the different classes within the LSA. And this is the place, the boot key, that is used to decrypt stuff like local systems, passwords for service accounts being in the registry. I was showing this last year, so I will skip it. Yes, things like that, hashes. Yes, all the different interesting secrets. Local systems accounts password, by the way. I'm not sure if you knew, but this is exactly the computer's password. Computer account has a password. That is the local system's password too. Yes? So how can we decrypt it? By having access to the boot key. Yes? So this is exactly what I will be getting access to. But can I copy, for example, system? Yes? Well, no. I already did that. But can I copy some? No, too. And I would like to show you how to do that. This is exactly the same way. Yes? And in order to be able to decrypt some, because some, when it's on the disk, is actually encrypted. With what? With the boot key. So I need system and I need some in order to be able to get access to hashes. So how this is happening? This is actually quite a straightforward operation. Before we get into the tools that are quite difficult, we need to know where the file is on the disk so we can find it. First of all, obviously, we've got it in the C, Windows, system 32, config, some. Yes, I want to copy. No, because it has been opened by another process. It's a non-share handle. Yes, so that is a lie, obviously, because I'm like, I'm going to go one level down and I'm just going to scratch it. Yes, as simple as this. So let's do it. So, but I need to know where it is on the disk. And like in Linux, in Windows, we've got also stuff that is called an inode, which is an identifier on the drive. So let's get into that place. So I'm going to use for that another tool, because we couldn't find the tool, so we decided to write it, which is cqtskfi-info. When I'm giving the path, so it's going to be Windows system 32, config again, some, the path to the file. And it shows me some kind of an ID. That ID, it's an inode, so the place where this file is on the disk. Now, I'm going to be referring to this inode in the further steps, in the further tools, because what I need to get to, I'm going to go to bin, this TSK tools, this is something that is called SleuthKit. Yes, you can find that this is a free forensic tools to this for the disk analysis. Is there anything better than that? Maybe, but these are great. Yes, they're not user-friendly, so be like this. Yeah. So let's move forward. The first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to use the tool that is called MMLS to find out information about the partition that I'm using, because I don't remember where is the offset, because we've got a little system partition, and then we've got the data partition, and this is one disk. So I need to kind of know where this partition starts. So that kind of information I need to pull out. How I'm going to do that? MMLS, okay, here we go. Physical drive, 0, yes? And that shows me where this partition is. So this is fantastic information that I can get. And it shows me over here, let me enlarge this so that we are able to spot this, that I got over here the basic data partition, that's this one, and this is the offset, so this is the beginning of the data partition where is my Windows installation. Yeah? So we've got that. So I'm going to copy this value. Lovely. We're almost home. And then we're going to get into, in this case, istat, to get information about that particular file. So I've got O, paste. That's how we kind of do it. That's why I said it's not very user-friendly. And then from which drive this offset? Well, in this case, it's going to be from physical drive 0, yes? And then at the very end, we specify 41899 as the file, 41899, so that I will be able to see information about the file. Awesome. This is perfect, by the way. I love the output. The reason why is because it allows us to understand plenty of things. How the file exists on the disk. File exists in three kind of stages. One thing is the file name, another one it's the metadata of the file, and another one is data of the file. Some people ask, what if I change metadata or name of the file? Will I lose the signature of the executable, for example? No, you will not, because the signature is actually calculated on the data. Yes? So that is actually quite straightforward. We've got over here this 128-3, the identifier of the data structure. So some database, it's out there. So the only thing we have to do is to copy it. Let's do it, yes? So we're going to do it like this. So the same story, like istat, but this time we're going to use a different tool, and that's going to be icat. I mean, seriously, could it be less friendly? No, yes? If you check out the help of these tools, you are like really zen, because it's quite a difficult toolkit, but they provide on the website a fantastic documentation. So make sure you check on that It's very detailed, yes? And I'm sure you're going to have a smooth start. They provide the tools to the disk analysis for Linux, Macs, yes, FreeBSD, stuff like that. So all of the systems are, or most of the systems are addressed. So we've got iCAD, physical drive, and so on, all nice. And then we need to specify at the very end the structure. Yeah? So it's a -128-3. And then we output this into C analysis sum. Sum. Yeah, that's the case. Now let's check out if this file has integrity. If it's going to get integrity, my system that I copied before would be able to decrypt it, and then we're going to get the hashes. Yeah, I don't know. It's a hot style demo, so let's see. So I'm going to get into tools over here. And I got over here the tool that is called CQ Hashdump version 2. This is the tool that we wrote to dump local hashes within the pentest. Yes, it's a tool, as everything that I already mentioned, that is not recognized by antivirus. Yes, so we really don't care about that. And if it's going to be recognized, just drop me an email and I will send you the new version, because we've got a generator for our tools. Yes, like new Mimikatz, you got it. Yeah, very, very easy. So this one, CQ hash dump, and then we specify sum dump, and then I need to specify where is sum. So sum is C analysis and sum, okay? And where is sys? And system is in C analysis system, yes? And if I got the hashes, and I do, that proves that the file that we copied, it's absolutely integral, yes? So this is how we are able to copy the files that are locked by the operating system for some reason. Think about the possibilities, yes? File is locked because it's some malware, yes? Okay, just copy it. You can always do it, because as long as it's on a disk, it's 100% yours, yes? So this is the case. Okay, guys, long story short, let's get into the next subject, which is related with operating systems places. And operating systems places is going to be like this. The first thing that I would love to talk about is related with something that a lot of people are talking about, but the thing is that not many people really did the deep dive into this. And that is something that is called cache logons. Cache logons, or cache logon data, or something that we call cache credentials. So when I log on to the domain and domain controller is not available, I log on with the cache logon data. Yes. Sometimes we've been asked the questions, is it safe solution? And I can tell you right now, very not romantically, that yes, it is safe, but I would like to prove it, and I would like to show you what's the story behind. Cached logons in Windows XP, they were a little bit of, excuse my language, a piece of crap, because within the registry, what was the algorithm used, we were only using the function that is called DCC1. DCC1, as you see, this is MD4 of the MD4 of the user's passwords and the username. Because this is, by the way, what the DCC1 is. Yes, it's a hash value of the hash of the user's passwords and the username value. On the top of that, we calculate MD4. Yes, in Windows, we use MD4 for hashing. Now, what is quite interesting is that because of the not very good level of security, because you were able to generate rainbow tables, specific ones though, for the cache credentials, and break it, since Windows Vista, that changed. And right now, it's so difficult. It's so difficult, yes? So we've got value that is called MSDCC2. This is coming from the PBKDF2 function. I mean, who cares about the names? I'm just saying if you are interested. But at the very end, what's the case is that we've got that DCC1 that I was talking about previously, and that is just an entry point to another function where we've got 10,240 iterations at the end, and at the end we've got something which is called MSDCC2, and that is the value that we save in the registry. That value in the registry is in Security Hive and in cache. You can find it, yes? So we've got this very nicely saved, and that's in practice how it looks. Yeah, so we've got security cache, and this is the place. Now, can we crack it? Sure, we can crack it, but then someone will need to generate rainbow tables for the two-dimensional approach with the username and the user passwords, where password is not really even taking a place there. It's just that we are analyzing the value, which is calculated on the password's hash and the username and the hash on the top of it. So now try to crack that. Possible? Sure. It's going to take time. Currently, this solution is considered as safe. So whenever we are thinking about how we are able to get access to cache logon data, I would love to show you a bunch of things related with that. And that's kind of interesting. Okay, so this is the setup. I've got here a machine. Yes, this is Windows 10. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with it. That's by the way, I always like to show the hacking activities on the up-to-date Windows. Yes, so what can we do? This is the best approach. Yes, so let's figure out. So the first thing that I want to show you before we go to the cache logon data is a little tool. That tool, I will need to get to the folder. Wait, where is it? It's over there in CQ Tools. That is called ChromePass. Absolutely not a big philosophy. We're going to combine two demos in one. Yeah, so make sure that you're going to stay focused. I got a Freddy. Freddy has a LinkedIn account. And he decided to save the data in a Chrome browser. Yes, Chrome doesn't make a scenario here. It could be Firefox, could be Internet Explorer, doesn't matter. Yes, so he saved the password in the browser. And question is, how safe this data is, and we're going to combine it with the cache credentials. Okay, so let's dig in. One thing more, you see, of course, the password was there. One thing more is that we will, I'm going to take this Freddy, and I'm going to lock his desktop, because I want to show you that I'm not cheating or something, that I'm going to log on with the password, as you see. And if I press enter, I log on. Yeah, so that's kind of clear. Now, time for cache credentials scenario. So what is happening? I will take this guy, restart, and I'm going to do it offline. The only reason why I'm going to do it offline, the only reason really, is because I want to simplify that scenario. Could this be happening online? Absolutely. Yes, I just want to make it super simple. Of course, at that scenario, we could say, well, we've got BitLocker, this will not work out. Yes. Yes, but that's not the only scenario there, okay? So we've got this, and what I'm going to do, settings in the virtual machine settings, and I will go to network adapter and disconnect the guy from the network to simulate the cache credentials logon, yes, as we all know it. Yep, lovely. Okay, so next, repair your computer, troubleshoot, advanced options, command prompt. Okay, and then let me change the font, guys, for you so that we've got it all nice and big right now. Okay, good. So now, question is, what can we do and where do we have these cache credentials being on the disk? And that is actually quite straightforward. We already know it's in the registry. Yeah, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to get into tools. Wait. Not tools, but CQ tools. Yeah, that's better. We've got Kiwi Secure Edition. And this is the place where we've got our version of Mimikatz. And that Mimikatz, because we cooperate with Benjamin on a lot of different types of options, it's Secure Edition. This Mimikatz, it's not recognized by antivirus, by the way. Yes? So this is the case. Now, what we're going to do? Let's overwrite cache logon data, yes, with the generation of the same values that I'm going to give over here by knowing the algorithm. Yes, this is what our team reverse engineered, by the way. Yes, the whole mechanism, what stands behind, and so on. Yes, so let's dig in. So we've got what we're going to do here. Well, simple. Yes, secure LSA, or maybe actually, I'm just thinking we're going to do secure LSA, maybe like this LSA dump cache. This would be the option D. Windows System 32, we've got just plenty of options, config. And now, what registry hive I need to specify over here? Answer is system. Why? Because that's the guy that, as we remember, decrypts and encrypts all of the other secrets. Yes, including values in a secrets registry hive. So that always comes out here. Now, another one, it's Windows, System 32, config. And then security, yes? Because this is the place where the cache logon data is. So, not a big philosophy. I hope we all understand all of the details, yes? Now, the last one, I'm going to use Kiwi. Yes, this is the switch. that allows me, this is the command, this is the switch that allows me to overwrite all of the cache credentials, cache logon data that is in the registry. And I had over there two. One is domain admin, and another one is a user. Yes, by default, we can have 10. So this is the case. Okay, this is done. So what I can do is to just continue. Let's don't forget that we are over here disconnected from the network, so we should be enforced to log on with the cache logon data. Now, question would be, is it possible to log on with the previous password? Yes, no, probably not, because we changed this. Now, what kind of type of information are we going to get access to? And that is something that I wanted to show you because it's kind of cool. So if we get into password, like this, yeah, I want to log on, no. And then password will be, this is what is happening in the Mimikatz underneath, password will be Mimikatz, yes? So let's find out if I log on. Yes, so the cache logon data has been just changed. I'm logging on the domain account, not local, because that wouldn't be a philosophy, yes? I'm logging on with the domain account, and let's see what kind of information I'll be able to grab there. So again, CQ tools. Again, let's go into Chrome Pass, and that takes a little bit of time, and I will explain in a moment why. Because this is the background for it. It's called Data Protection API. One of the most hardcore subjects ever. The last time it was broken was in 2011 on Black Hat. Then in last year, we have broken it in plenty of other ways. Yeah, so we were the next ones to break it. And we were able to reverse engineer a couple of mechanisms, which I will show you in a second. Yes. So we've got over here, as you see, password. It's not there. Why? Because user's password is one of the factors that encrypts your own secrets. So if you feel like is storing data in a browser safe, answer is as long as it uses data protection API, it is, because it relies on your own password. And if you don't share your password with other people, yes, which I believe you don't, yes, then of course your secrets are fine. Wait a second, are they really fine? Not necessarily. And this is what I wanted to show you, yes? So if you started to feel comfortable, that's not a good idea, yes? Let's move forward. So who else has access to that? Well, answer to that is actually quite straightforward. Whenever we get into our data protection API data, so this is AppData, Roaming, Microsoft Protect, yeah, in this place over here, we've got something that we call master keys. One of the master keys I have actually marked for myself so that I know which one I should work on, and I should work on this one, yes? And these master keys are encrypted with two components independently. One, your password, so that you are able to read your own passwords from the browser later on, yes? Second, and that's kind of not cool, with the key that you can find in the domain controller's memory. It's like, what? Yeah, exactly. Let's get there. Yes, I will show you because it's actually quite cool. So, let's get into the domain controller. Now, version of the domain controller absolutely doesn't matter. So, any domain controller processes this data, even 2016, in exactly the same way. And what would be our job right now? So, I got over here, let me enlarge it, domain controller, yes? And within this domain controller, again, I've got Mimikatz Secure Edition, privilege. This is a very difficult word to type for me always. Privilege debug. Oh, again, no. Even if you tell me what I missed, it will be still difficult, you know. Privilege is a difficult word. Anyway, at least for my blonde hair. So let's move forward. Yes, so we've got this. Next stage would be to extract from the memory that particular key that encrypts data in everybody's profiles in a domain. So that's how it works. Secure LSA, backup keys, export, yes? And then we got it. Awesome, that worked out. So what we see over here, it's something very important, which is called PFX. PFX, as we know, it's a container of the private key. So what kind of private key is that? So what happens right now, I will show you, start dot, And this PFX, I have to copy on the client machines. I already did that. Why private key? And what is it? Well, let me show you something interesting within the public key too. It's going to take a little moment when it opens. But that private key, of course, decrypts stuff that was encrypted within the user's profile with the domain public key. And what we got over here is that that is a certificate that is not trusted, expired, issued to no one, issued by nobody. It's a kind of a ghost nice of a key in a domain controller's memory. For what? Okay, let's see. So I take this out, and in the user's profile, we've got something that is called BK Secure. Everybody has this, BK, your domain name. That stands for the backup key. That is the public key of the domain. Public key of the domain. That's the second item that encrypts your secrets. So if this is encrypted by the private key, I have to have a public key. I have to have a private key in order to decrypt it. Yes, very logical stuff. So let's do it. So I don't have to be an administrator over there. I started the console as a regular user. Yes, why? Because at that stage, it's all in my profile. Yes, so that's actually quite easy to move on. So let me go to the tools, CQ tools, disk tools, and this is the place where I've got all the necessary tools. The first tool that I will need to use, it's the CQ hashcalc. Why? Because I already mentioned that within the data protection API, we are encrypting our secrets, one of the factors, with our password. But I don't know the password, but I've got the private key. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to decrypt the secrets with the private key from the domain controller's memory and encrypt them again with my new hash of my new Mimikatz password. And then I will be probably able to read them. Yes, this is the whole flow. So CQ hashcalc, as we got it, Mimikatz, F. Krueger. Yes, this is the hash that we're going to be using over here. So I'm going to copy this. Lovely. Okay. Now, the story goes like this. CQ master key AD takes three parameters. PFX, the one that we grabbed from the domain controller's memory. File, the master key that is encrypted. The new hash, which we know because we just generated it. Okay, let's move on. So the first one will be maybe new hash, since I have it in the clipboard. Second stuff will be PFX, which I have already there. And the third stuff will be file, which I don't have yet, but I'm going to have it in a moment, which is this one. Shift right click. And then we get copy as path, very useful. And then we get there, and then we just, come on. No, oh, come on. It looks like it didn't copy it or something. Let's try one more time. Copy as path. No, okay. Yeah, I know. I did it on purpose because I want to this to finish, because it kind of like didn't allow me to paste it. Okay, now it's good. Yes, so we got it. So what happens is that it generates me a new item in this area. As you see, there is a new one, AD modified. So what I'm doing, I'm taking the old master key that is encrypting my secrets and in a form that I'm not able to decrypt them, and I'm taking this AD modified out of like this. Perfect. So I've replaced them right now. And the last thing I have to do is to give it, by using attrib command, the attributes of the system and hidden. Let's do it. Before we get there, as you remember, there was no password. So system and hidden, lovely. And then let's refresh it. And as you see, we've got a password. Yes? Okay. Nobody said it's going to be easy today in the morning, you know? Good. Summary. Necessary summary. What happened is that because within the data protection API, we've got two default mechanisms for encryption and keeping users' secrets secret. Yes, one is the password, or hash, technically. Second one, it's the public key of the domain. Because we couldn't get access to the user's secrets by not possessing the user's hash, we were like, let's then extract the key from the domain controller's memory, the private key, corresponding with the public key that encrypted the secrets, and let's just decrypt them. Yeah, one of the ways. And because Data Protection API cannot handle decryption that easily, we had to encrypt the master key, so the key that encrypts our secrets, with our new hash. And that's exactly what happened here. What's the conclusion at the end? Is that domain admin can do a little bit more than maybe we used to think. And that's the person that has access to everybody's secrets ever stored ever within every single profile ever. Yes? So if you are a domain admin of the 1,000, X thousand people company, you get access to everybody's passwords to their personal profiles, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever, email, encryption, whatever, PKI options, because private keys are also encrypted with the Data Protection API, and so on. Quite a powerful privilege, isn't it? Yes? So domain admin is a little bit of a master of puppets right now, not just a regular IT shy guy, yes? So this is something that I wanted to show you. What is even worse? What is even worse? Yeah, because we could be like, okay, that's kind of not cool. I agree, that's definitely not cool. But what I wanted to show you is one more thing. That if, and this is another machine that I've got, if user, we could be thinking, well, I can always use KeePass. Haha, here comes the bad news, yes? So what's the case? Well, basically, users KeePass. Okay, let's have a look. I'm going to get into the place where the user stores its KeePass database. Hopefully all will work out. I am logged on over here. Is it set here? Who am I logged on as? Okay, which just who am I? Yeah? I am logged on over here as a domain admin. Yes? Okay. So can I take people's KeePass databases and decrypt them? Sure. If you put the security within the KeePass installation in Windows credentials, because you've got actually three ways, two of them make sense. One is the master key password, which is here. Yes, that's okay. Second is you rely on Windows credentials, and that's kind of not okay. Yes? So we kind of broke this mechanism, so I want to show you this. So what's the story? The story is that this is user's CQ base. And am I able to get access to this? No, it asks me for master password, key file, or Windows user account. None of those I have. None of those I have. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I don't have access to this. What I'm going to do, I'm going to take this database. I think I've copied it already, but just to make sure. Yeah, this is the one. Let me overwrite it, maybe. Even this, replace. And I've got it over here. Now, if I get access to the user's profile, I'm able to get access to the master keys that we were talking about. Yes, I'm shortening this scenario a little bit. So these master keys, yes, that I've got over here, and I have exported this already. This is the master key of a Freddy Krueger. Yes, so in order to be able to play with that particular file, yes, I'm gonna technically get this master key, yes, and I've got it over here, yes. So this is my key. Just a second, here we go. Yes, this is the one. And how does it work? It works like this, that I got over here an entropy. Entropy that is about to be read from the key pass. How do I read entropy? I will show you in a moment. Entropy is just a random value. Then we've got this master key, CB something something. This is exactly what you see in the back, CB in Notepad, yes? Lovely, so this is a very long key. And this blob, C analysis protected user key bin, which is in the user's profile, because this key, this bin, it's a blob that decrypts and encrypts a KeePass database. And that blob is decryptable only with our master key. But since I'm able to get access to the user's master key, I'm able to decrypt the blob so that I'm able to decrypt the database of KeePass. Yes? So, long story short, if I do that, yes? So we've got CQDP API blob decryptor, yes, so we've got this one. That gives me this key here. That's the key that is extracted from the binary blob that I use to decrypt the KeePass database. Now, the next command that we're going to use, yes, because I have to copy this file, yes, so we've got CQDP API blob decryptor. Another one is CQ Data Protection API KeePass DPC decryptor, and that takes as parameters two things: the key decrypted from the Data Protection API blob, perfect, the KeePass database files. This is all what I've got. Okay, let's find it. So we've got, we can do dash, like, or minus k, key, punk, minus f, and we've got c, analysis, and we've got over here, oh, I was there, cq base kbdx. Awesome. So I got a new file that is within the analysis, if we get there. This is this one, created. Yes, and if I double click on it, it asks me for the password, but I already know it because it has been given by our tool. And our password is secure, yes? And enter, and I'm able to get access to the user's passwords with KeePass. Is KeePass a bad solution? No, but we have to be super aware users of KeePass and know based on what do we protect our credentials, yes? As simple as it is. Okay, guys. So, a little bit of a summary, yes? Interesting so far? Okay, good, happy to hear. So, a little bit of summary. As you see, within the disk, we've got a lot of different types of secrets. Procmon, the one that I showed at the very beginning, allows us to trace of what is happening within the operating system. Remember that even if we share a disk with someone, we prepare an image and so on, like we had with the case of forensic in Iceland, it does not necessarily mean that all the data is out there. And it's really about who is smarter there, yes? I'm always repeating this because it's very much true, yes? If we know 100% where the secrets are stored on the disk, then we are able to delete them and then we are able to share it. There are so many other places on the disk that are out there. A lot of things that are secrets on the disk depend on system Hive. Not security, because security is the second one that is about to be decrypted, but system containing a boot key is the one that allows us to decrypt a gazillions of secrets within the operating system there. I showed you additional mechanism, which this one was actually one of our team's discoveries with the data protection API of our secrets. Data protection API, it's a good mechanism, very good, but it relies on two things. One, your password. Second, who is your domain admin? Yes, is this a good human being? Yes, is he controlled or is she controlled? Maybe not. Yes, so this is something that we have to reconsider. Of course, at the very end, when someone is about to steal our drive, we have to remember about disencryption because obviously this is something that will prevent offline the activities that I was showing to you. So this is a little bit of my case. Of course, if you want to get more information about all the stuff and so on, this is the links to our website, our Facebook page, where we post all the different cool stuff related with security. This is my Twitter. I don't have much of a personal life because my job is my hobby as well. So I only post there stuff that is related to security. Though, actually, I had a PlayStation yesterday in a hotel. I discovered it in the morning. I was like, oh my God, they put PlayStation in my room. I was like, shoot, it's a pity that I cannot play, but next time. So I posted that one. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but it's a security related too. Anyway, so this is the case. And of course, thank you so much for coming to the sessions. And at the end, I will do something that I always wanted to do, which is because with guys from Cornerstone Ad Skills and Global Knowledge, we work together within the different types of trainings. I got that kind of stuff with me, yes? And there is more at the booth. So I'm just going to throw it on you right now. And if I manage, yes? And capture one. And in the meantime, thank you so much, guys, for coming. Wish you a great day.